Hey, it's Kramer. To keep with my mission to teach you how to think about the markets like a pro, I want to tell you about another CNBC podcast, a show where I spend my mornings squawk on the street. Every day, my co-anchors David Faber, Carl Quintanilla, and I bring you the opening bell and some of the biggest names in business and politics. Right now, I'm sharing with you a full episode to give you a preview. But don't forget, subscribe to the Squawk on the Street podcast. Booyah!
Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Good morning and welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm David Faber along with, his name's Jim Cramer. He's been away for like
five business days.
But we are together. We're live from the New York Stock Exchange. Unfortunately, we're still missing one more, but he'll be back soon. Carl is on assignment. He is actually on assignment, taking a look at futures this morning as we get you set up, of course, for the day ahead. Start trading 30 minutes from now. You can see we are set up for a higher open. And that does take us right to our roadmap, of course, because the market is up because, well, trade talks at least are back. The U.S. and China agreeing to meet next month, and stocks, as you saw, reacting positively to that. We're going to talk a bit about Goldman shrinking the partner ranks. Interesting story. Up to a dozen executives reportedly negotiating the exit. Is it a sign of a broader shift for this Wall Street bank? And shares of Palo Alto, they are up. As you can see, CEO Nikesh Arora joins us exclusively in a few minutes. They're up ahead of the bell, of course. This morning, we'll be talking with Nikesh. Let's start, though, with the markets this morning. Chance for Jim and I to sort of get back on the same page as to where things stand right now. We also got some fairly positive ADP numbers, 195,000 private sector jobs added in August. That was above the estimate. Jim, the consumer continues to be quite strong in this economy. Yeah. I heard you talking to Joe about, you know, we're the only ones that talk recession. We got a 10-year above 1.5 again. Imagine that.
I thought that when I saw the it's like the bonds also rise. I mean, I think that what we've seen is this endless yield going down versus, say, where the 1 year is, has just spoken so loudly to people that unless the Fed cuts dramatically, the drumbeat of recession will continue. I continue to look at employment. I keep waiting for some sign of weekly claims being not good.
Right.
I keep waiting for some number which indicates to me that retail sales are bad. I don't get it. And so I tend to think that we do. I was stopped on the street by a construction guy right here.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to talk to the construction guys.
Yeah, of course.
It's a giant project that's going to last like 17 years.
There's a lot of them.
We'll all be dead by the time they finish the Bankers Trust building, right?
Yes.
The guy grabs me. He goes, hey, what is this with the recession? And I said, don't look at me. He goes, I am looking at you. You talking recession. I said, no, you got the wrong guy. I mean, he goes, the media. And I'm thinking, how sophisticated is a guy, hard hat guy, saying, hey, listen, the media is talking us in recession while he's building one of the largest projects. And I do feel that's metaphorical, of course, anecdotal, but metaphorical. The more we talk about it, the more people may believe it. But it's still not showing up when you look at Walmart and Costco.
No, it's not. It's not. Now, it is showing up when you look at investment to a certain extent, or the lack of business investment, slower business investment.
Yes.
Not pointing to a recession. And really, to be fair,
what?
The vast majority of people we speak to during the course of the day are not calling for a recession. They are not.
Well, yeah,
they're calling for the
same
rate of growth, roughly 2% GDP growth. Happy with that. I mean, the bottom line in terms of these numbers, the ADP numbers, you know, 3-month private sector average monthly job gains of 148, 6-month average 150. Now, you know, 12 months, 184. Last year, we were doing 219,000. So it's down, but it's still strong.
But you have to watch. You have to watch Walmart, Amazon, Target, Costco, Home Depot. They are the new retailers. And I think that we spend a lot of time looking at the mall and looking at who's in the mall and recognizing, hey, wait a second, there's weakness. And then I see watch and I say to myself, not only is there not weakness, but there's a consolidation. And when you hear Target just jamming the suppliers, then you realize, you know what, you got to be careful saying that the consumer is going to have to spend $800 more, which is old figures from the Fed. Everything, the Fed is... Yeah. Is talked about too much, too.
This is very interesting.
What do you mean,
Target basically telling you, just reference it. It's suppliers. You deal with it.
Brian,
we're not going to raise prices. By the way, come on. What are they supposed to do? If you're one of these suppliers, mid to small size business, how are you supposed to swallow
you're gonna have
that?
A bad year.
Yeah, you're going to have a bad year.
Yeah, you will. Now, some of them have credit problems. and they will have to reconfigure. If you read Dollar Tree's unbelievable conference call last week, Gary Feldman saving $100 million by just trying to figure out.
I did, you know, actually. By moving. Strangely enough, I did read that because I think you were gone, enough. So I chose to read it.
I mean, how about the fact that the containers are not being used effectively?
Right.
The switching away continually.
But we're still talking about $270 billion worth of goods coming from China that will be tariffed. Well, some already are. The rest will be December 15th.
We've
got the additional October 1st tariffs, which, by the way, will go into effect. The other 5% taking it from 25 to 30% on what is already under tariff, which will take effect prior to any meetings that take place between the U.S. and China.
Look, I've been kind of right on the president's plan on tariffs, so I'm going to double down here. I think that his goal is to have all the tariffs be, say, 25, so he can take them down if he wants to ahead of the election.
Right.
Particularly because, remember, he looks at the stock market.
Yep.
The Fed should be looking at the bond market, which is telling you your rates are too high. The president looks at the stock market because the president has always viewed that as the best gauge. Now, here we are. The Dow's up 330 points since I left. And what really happened? Well, we found out that two phone calls that most of the media, the Red Vanity Fair, believes were lies with China. Now I come back and it's like Mnuchin, who's the most trusted guy in the media because the media loves the guy, saying, hey, listen, things are good. Lighthizer being involved does matter. He's a technician, but does matter. But I continue to see, David, the two things I see are companies starting to take advantage of the low rates. $28 billion.
Yeah.
Did you see
Disney get that, 275 on 2.75 on a 30-year?
Do you remember how much John Deere was in trouble in 2008, 2009, their finance arm? Now John Deere, in the midst of what's supposed to be a trade war that's destroying the farmers, well, guess what? They borrow at incredibly low prices. David, there's an article in USA Today.
It's quite helpful.
Right, about AT&T and how they have the best wireless. David, if AT&T can refinance, do you think we're going to be sitting here worried about AT&T?
Yes, I do.
You do?
I do. I still believe we will be worried about AT&T over the next couple of years and where the over-under is and how long it's going to be until there's concern about the dividend. Now, they will absolutely disagree with that, but I'm just reflecting a lot of conversation that I have endlessly with investors who own the stock, others who choose not to do so, but look at it. And there are certainly plenty of people who would take issue with the fact that their network is superior to Verizon's in terms of the way Verizon optimizes for wireless and the fact that a lot of their, obviously, EBITDA comes from DirecTV
and Warner.
Can
you feel better about GE with the low rates?
You can feel better about everything with the low rates in terms of the ability of these companies to refinance and lower their interest payments, which is only a good thing.
Right. And the fact is there's $28 billion in IPOs last quarter and $28 billion in debt in one day.
I know. By the way, speaking of IPOs.
What's that?
Have you seen there's some headlines on the WeWork IPO. I know you've had some thoughts about this. They did. They did, amazingly enough. But I did want to share some insight as well, because certainly it's a name that we've been waiting for to potentially hit the market. They're starting to, on the roadshow, they're starting to obviously sell. They're not coming next week at WeWork. We can't expect that to be the case, Jim. But the valuation targets are continuing to decline in terms of at least what I'm hearing from those who... Oh, I didn't bring my pad with me. I got my notes, what I'm hearing is the demand is not there at this point at even $25 billion.
There was a $40 billion.
Now, there was a Bloomberg headline that ran a little bit that said 20 to 30. What I'm hearing is even at 25 right now, there is not going to be a great deal of demand. And it's going to be interesting to see where WeWork comes in. Yesterday, Sam Zell was on our air, of course, the noted real estate investor. Let me just share what he said. You can hear it yourself, of course, in terms of that business. He didn't have any real positive things to say. Do we have that?
I've had the privilege of investing in this kind of company once before. As a matter of fact, this company or this kind of company began in 1956 with a guy named Feejin, who rented a floor and then subdivided it. Every single company in this space has gone broke.
I don't know who Feejin is, by the way. We got to find Feejin. That was 56, so he may no longer be with us. But Zell yesterday, Roth, of course, related, and Sternlicht were all at an ISI conference and all saying similarly negative things. Now, all right, they're real estate guys. They have an axe to grind, maybe in some way, but there are certainly questions about the business model. Thank you. My pads. I appreciate that. Good. We'll see where things end up, Jim. But
I so don't want to be in that deal. I said that before I left, so that's not revelatory.
No, you were quite negative, in fact.
Yeah, I just said, listen, this is just
the first hit.
Right. I took some
they are growing very quickly.
Like, I could care less. Unless my mother calls me, I really don't care.
As the valuation number declines here, and as we see what their choices are in terms of where the Wii company would choose to actually go public, I think we should also remember SoftBank, such a significant investor here, at higher numbers. Post-money valuation at the time, I believe they took in $6 billion from SoftBank, $5 billion in the form of primary growth capital, another billion. This was back earlier this year in secondary capital. And that was around $47 billion valuation. So you have SoftBank going out to try to do Vision Fund 2. You have Uber now trading below the prices that SoftBank invested in. Either time. Remember, of course, they were about $6.6 billion into Uber at various prices. And the prospect of WeWork coming public at a valuation below $25 billion, that's got to give some pause to SoftBank in terms of their ability to go out with Vision Fund 2.
How desperate are they that they have to do this? I mean, look, if it's a real winner, let's wait a little. Although, of course, this like Slack. Oh, work and WeWork. If it has work in the title, I'm a seller.
We'll get to Slack, of course, around the bell. It's going to be down. Although, yeah. I mean, the growth rate is still very, very strong.
Cut them some Slack. The rate's good.
Yeah.
Microsoft.
When we come back, though, speaking of earnings, Palo Alto Networks out with those results.
So they were ahead of forecast. Where it was at 4:35.
See, the stock looks up to as much as 10% before we get going here at the New York Stock Exchange. We're going to speak with the company CEO, Nikesh Arora. And by the way, to give you one more look at futures, of course, as we do get ready for that open, you can see we are going to be higher on the prospect of new trade talks with China sometime in October.
And because I'm back.
And because Jim is finally.
Thank you. No arrogance there.
Finally. Gone for 5 months.
Dave, it's not always the case that we have stock up 19, 20 points. And have the CEO who's behind it. Yes, that's right. We've got a company whose stock is up more than 9% ahead of the bell. And it is Palo Alto Networks, symbol PANW, joining us now at Post 9. It's Palo Alto's chairman and CEO, old friend, Nikesh Arora. Nikesh, first of all, congratulations. You traced out a vision yesterday, which is that not only are you going to be number one in what we can call firewall, which was somewhat older, but still relevant. But cloud, how do you intend to be number one?
Well, Jim, I think we're in a once-in-a-lifetime generational shift in computing. Every company, every CIO you talk to is saying, we're going to the cloud. Either they're going to the cloud, they're talking about going to the cloud, they're working with Amazon, Google, Alibaba, Oracle, or Microsoft, moving their workloads to the cloud. Now, if you think about cybersecurity, there is no single large cybersecurity player who's actually focused on providing cloud security. You cannot make this generational computing shift happen without securing the applications going to the cloud. So we took an early point of view about 12 months ago. We went, we acquired companies, we integrated them, we went to customers, demonstrated where the need for security is, and we're doing well so far. Fingers crossed.
All right, now, your company had been known for having a little bit slower growth than some of the bigger, also upstart players in let's say both cloud and cyber. You traced out a vision last night, which would indicate that you can accelerate billings versus a lot of the favorites, including Cramer Fave Okta, which, you know, I talk about constantly.
I know you love the upstarts. Jim, it's very easy to drive revenue growth without profitability. I would love to have that kind of a business. Unfortunately, my investors want cash flow and growth. So we're going to go generate $1 billion+ of free cash flow over the next 3 years, every year. On top of that, we're going to go what we call our next generation security billings and revenue, approximately 57%, which in next year would make us bigger than any of the upstarts you like, whether it's Okta, CrowdStrike, Zscaler. And FY22, it probably makes us about 80% bigger than your favorite company.
Well, just so you know, I like Okta. Zscaler, but my travel trust owns Palo Alto. So before we just say, hey, listen, I like them more. 3-year growth last night traced out well in advance, well higher than some of the analyst models, of which you also indicated you follow.
Well, you know, I've been studying the industry, the company, the market for the last 1 year, and I've read about 25 analyst reports over the last 3 months and went through every model. You know, very early in my life, I was an analyst, so I understand how these models work. You have to make sure you understand the growth rate, profitability, and long-term, you know, cost of capital. So I looked at every one of them and saying, what's going to make them change their models in point of view about Palo Alto Networks? In the end, I can give them all the song and dance about vision and strategy. They're going to go and try and put a number in their models to figure out what my stock's worth.
Okay. The thing that really struck me was that there were a lot of people, Nikesh, who said, your deal, Mike, what you're going to do is buy companies, buy companies, buy companies. There were some transition, some managers lost. To me, what you straightened out last night was that the acquisitions are to be so that you have the ultimate. And also that there are some companies that have to deal with 212 vendors. If they bring you in and there are some big wins against Zscaler, some very big wins against Cisco that you mentioned, I'm talking about government wins, I'm talking about retail chain wins, that this is being done because companies really should consolidate and you're the one that they can use.
Well, if you look at the landscape, and I studied enterprise companies are amazing at building their first set of products, and then you build a distribution on the back of it. Now the question is, can you fill that distribution with better product on a constant basis? Can you go from being a one-trick pony to somebody who can go do multi-product capability in the market? And in the last 12 months, we have really pivoted hard. We generated $452 million of billings this year in our next generation security business. We're guiding to $800, $810 million next year, which is huge, which allows us to be bigger than everybody else. So we've done a strong pivot. I believe we have to go out and get the best of breed technology for our customers, give it integrated, and make sure that they don't have to go to multiple vendors. Now, they don't want to buy things off my price list. They want it integrated because they're sick and tired of having multiple vendors in their infrastructure. I wouldn't want them. That's not making you more secure. It's increasing risk the more people you have in your infrastructure. So we're hopefully trying to answer the customer's call in providing that integrated platform. And so far, it looks like it's resonating with our customers in the market.
Well, to the extent that you are still captive to the global economy, and we spent a lot of time at this desk talking about business investment or the lack thereof, perhaps because of the uncertainty brought on by the trade war. Is it a concern? Are you seeing any evidence that perhaps people are not making the migration as quickly to the cloud as they might otherwise, given the capital that has to be used for it? And is that a concern going forward?
I think technology is bigger than secular trends on economic investment. Do you believe companies will survive Amazon without investing in technology? Do you believe companies will survive Google or Facebook or Uber or all these companies we talked about here? I think in the next 10 years, 50% of the market cap of the world will be tech companies. Or you'll have to be a tech-enabled company. Is Uber a transportation company or a tech company? Is Airbnb a hospitality company or a tech company?
Actually, I should ask you. What do you think? I mean, I don't remember if you were at SoftBank when they made the original Uber investments, but
I wasn't there. Right. I did the Ola and Grab taxi ones. But fundamentally, if you look at it, many of the new generation companies are fundamentally technology-enabled. Their kind of DNA is technology, and they do hospitality or transportation on top. So if you have to make that generational shift, every company has to invest tons and tons of money in technology. You have to make sure you have customer data. You have to be able to mine it. You have to get targeted. You can do so many tech things in the next 10 years. I don't think tech spending is going away. And if tech spending is not going away, they're going to need to be secure. So now, we're in a growth business.
Jack Dorsey gets hacked. Jack Dorsey. We all get hacked. My American Express was hacked. My J.P. Morgan was hacked. I mean, everything is hacked. What I come back to is what you said at the beginning of your call, which is it's now artificial intelligence. It's no longer just guys. How can you be smarter than the bad guys with AI?
You know, it's kind of uneven, asymmetrical playing field. The bad guys have to be right once. You have to be right all the time. It's a very, very high bar. So in the new word in our industry is called cyber resilience. If I get kicked in the guts, how quickly can I stand up and how hurt am I? So it's no longer about cybersecurity. It's about I need to make sure I architect in such a way that my business doesn't shut down, my data doesn't go away. So the key is to set up your infrastructure in a way that you don't put all the crown jewels in the same place. You put checks and balances on who can get into it, who can have access to it. So there's a lot of re-architecting going on. But if you look at it, a lot of companies are collecting data. Data is the new gold. and people are going after data. You've seen that in the consumer space. You've seen that in the financial services space. So the key is to design the architecture in a way that your stuff is secure, and the key is to reduce complexity in your infrastructure.
Well, I was a great fan of your predecessor, Mark McLaughlin. You're carrying on the tradition, doing a terrific job. It's right that the stock be up. Those who sell it at 180, Nikesh, okay.
Unfortunately, I can't buy. I would have bought every share.
I struggle for word. How about stupid? There you go. Nikesh Arora, CEO of Palo Alto Networks. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Jim.
Well, coming up, we're going to have Jim's Mad Dash, of course, as we count down to the opening bell. Let's give you one more look at futures. We start trading here about 7.5 minutes from now. We're back right after this. All right, we got 5 minutes before we get to an opening bell. See, futures, of course, will lead us to a higher open on all the major averages on optimism once again about potential talks between the China and U.S. over the trade dispute. All right, let's get to a mad dash, then straight into that opening bell. You've been focused on Signet, mostly a bad news story, but this morning a little bit better.
Yeah, Jim Drosos, let's just say Ms. Drosos has had some troubles turning the company around. And the stock shows you that. If you had a longer-term view, you would just say, wow, this is untouchable. Well, she made it touchable today. She put out some numbers that show you some better free cash flow, better same-store sales, a refinancing that gives them a lot more room. Remember, what are we talking about here? It's a small-cap stock, but we're talking about Kay, Zales, Jared, Piercing Pagoda. I like what they're doing with online. Zales had good online numbers. Piercing Pagoda had good online numbers. I went to see her, Ms. Drosos, when last year at Christmas time, and I had high hopes, and hopes were not delivered. But this does say they can make it. David, this matters because Ulta, very similar story, very bad number last week.
You were not here for the big Ulta breakdown.
Would have been good for a lot of others, but Gina sells jewelry. Okay, Ulta had a very bad time with cosmetics.
Well, so lack of contouring. Behaviors are changing.
Wow, yeah. I like that. Also,
I had to read the call there, too.
Well, I got to tell you, Estee Lauder did not have that. You and Estee Lauder managed to be able to get away from domestic.
But is this a real turn for Signet, Jim, or just a
one-day?
No,
more time. Buys more time for the holiday season. That matters because brick and mortar, David, is sinking, unless it's watch. And, of course, the A there is Amazon. We continue to see pressure on department stores.
Big board is the American Red Cross. And they are highlighting, of course, relief efforts for the victims of Hurricane Dorian, which continues to rage over at the NASDAQ. OpenText, that's an enterprise information management software company. Speaking of
yes,
companies that let you do your job better, let's start with Slack. Symbol work. It is down about 14%.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still growing the top line at a very significant rate, but it has not performed particularly well since its first day performance, which was very strong,
yes,
out of the box as an initial public offering.
Remember, odd offering, the kind of offering that we saw from Spotify.
Yes.
And from Alphabet.
Did not actually raise capital.
No.
Just listed.
But you know what, David? It's guidance. I read between the lines and say, has Satya Nadella decided he's tired of losing in this business? Now, periodically, as we listen to Nikesh Arora, a lot of people feel that Microsoft is not doing a great job in cyber. They feel that Microsoft's not doing a great job in this community kind of software. Nikesh is right that Microsoft hasn't been that great in cyber. But you know what, David? Satya Nadella is making a lot of good moves. And I do worry, just like I worry about Dropbox, that Nadella has decided, let's take them on too. We now have Azure. We're fine on cloud.
So the suite of products will include something that competes with
yes,
a Slack in the workplace.
Yes, and I think this
is a concern, at least,
right,
that you would raise.
And this is the first time, you know, it's the opening of the NFL. And these days, when you see them look using a Microsoft program, on the sideline, Tom Brady, you're not going to say, oh, who made them do that? You're going to say, hey, kind of works okay. What happened? You have something new?
No, we have Stuart Butterfield, the CEO of Slack, was on Squawk Box this morning. He said a variety of things in terms of course, the long term, their focus in terms of their strong cash position. Let's listen in to at least one of the things he had to say in defending the company.
Investors are going to make decisions over the long run. This is a very strong quarter. But whether it's up or down, yesterday up 8%, the regular market down after, it's not going to make a whole bunch of difference to the long-term holders or to the business. This was strong quarter, $145 million revenue versus $92 million the year prior, and we're happy with that.
Also went on to say they have a strong cash position of close to $800 million. And listen, if you're looking at minus $100 to $110 million in free cash flow, that seems prudent and responsible. They are obviously spending, as they have told us they would, to grow and continue to grow at a rapid rate.
I have Carvana on tonight. And Carvana is a company that has, they're not necessarily exactly, because Carvana is selling cars. But the idea of grow to grow. And grow yourself into a market cap and grow yourself into a business. That works, okay? It worked. It doesn't matter. Butterfield's talking about the near term. Well, I mean, Pinterest is another company. Carvana. These are two companies that kind of got hammered on some quarters and are coming back. So I agree with him that we should not necessarily measure any company on a quarter. But, David, if they don't do well in the next quarter, then it does matter. And I know a lot of CEOs say they don't look at stock. The Cash Aurora, by the way, looks at stock.
Yeah.
I actually find the stock market, as a la the late, great Andy Grove, pretty good. I know that Buffett says weighing machine, voting machine. Andy Grove said, you as a CEO have to deliver on a quarter. That's a sign in 3 months you should be able to make progress. And Andy Grove, which is, wrote a book, Only a Paranoid Survive, along with Shoe Dog, the great business book.
Shoe Dog I've read. I haven't read all, Only the Paranoid Survive, but yeah, Shoe Dog.
I was so proud that, that Buck Knight came on Mad Money. And that, thank you. A lot of people made that work. Mark Parker, also Tim Cook with Apple. David, Apple.
Yes, sir.
You know, their best days are behind them, right? I mean, isn't that, don't we know that as they borrowed? What do they borrow? They're borrowing at German rates,
yeah,
right?
I mean, German. You have to pay Apple to take your money.
Well, and you know what that tells me is that they're going to buy.
Kidding.
Bruckheimer's going to sit there. He's going to buy all the stock he wants. They're either buying literally at save on the dividend. But the analysts think that Apple's going to have a bad quarter. I'm starting to think more about 5G. The analysts keep waiting for the boycott of Apple. That doesn't happen. I'm talking about China.
I'm looking at the performance of our parent company, Comcast, up over 2% on a research note from Oppenheimer where they upgrade it and talk about pricing power and free cash flow generation. Also maybe benefiting from a little bit of relief on Brexit because, of course, Sky is an important asset of our company. And there was concern about what a hard Brexit might mean. But that stock hitting new recent highs, 46.35 on Comcast.
Low rates help them, too?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. David, yesterday something happened that I think is really interesting. Union Pacific basically guided down pretty severely. Stock's now straight up. Trade talks, business better than people expect, even though it's not as good. I find that the rails are doing quite well here, and they shouldn't be if we're going into a recession. They were signaling that. The real estate investment trusts. Another group that if we were going into recession shouldn't be this well off. And by the way, utilities are refinancing like mad. What I'm giving you is a theory that low rates are helping. And then the other thing is just what?
Well, I'm looking at Netflix because when you think about a company that could benefit from lower rates as well, given its debt load, given its need to continue to raise capital in both the debt and sometimes the equity markets. But Netflix is down.
Lower rates,
almost 2.5% this morning. I don't actually know why.
Wait, lower rates, does that correlate well with better shows?
No, it doesn't.
I rest my case.
It doesn't.
The prosecution rests.
But despite what some see as risks to Netflix, specifically in the form, and Reed Hastings, its CEO, will disagree with this, in the form of Disney Plus, and whether or not that will result in slower growth, or perhaps people even saying, you know what, I'm not sure I need Netflix anymore. And back to this idea of how much of it is really catalog viewing as opposed to originals. As long as rates stay low for Netflix, it would seem that that kind of threat is not as great because
no, it's
they
not.
Do rely a lot on the capital markets and the largesse provided there to continue to fund their growth.
But, you know, David, a lot of people are talking about allocation of time. Now, Reed Hastings has always said more and more time being devoted to this kind of product. By the way, Strauss Zelnick, Take-Two, the best gaming company, more and more time being devoted to this kind of product. David, at a certain point, there are only so many hours. And, yes, they can be entirely consumed by programming. But, you know, you have to go to sleep. I've not preferred that. On Tuesdays and Fridays, I don't sleep.
At all?
I try not to.
Oh, that's good. That's,
I go to bed around 12:30. I get up at 3 on Tuesdays.
Right.
My trainer comes at 3:45.
Yeah, that's good. No, that's very healthy.
Yeah, I know. Mom at Oz
once
critiqued my lifestyle and found it wanting. But he's an Eagles fan, so we give him a pass.
DNA is different than most of ours.
Right.
It is, I think.
Yes. Well, you know, you never know. But David, I guess
you
what I'm saying is...
Knows. One day at the desk, it's all over.
When the tariff's away, the mice play.
Yes.
Except for oil, which still can't catch fire.
I did want to talk to you a bit about Goldman Sachs, the story in the journal. It's funny because, obviously, as you might imagine, I sort of talked to a number of bankers in the course of trying to do my job, and I was aware of a couple of departures, but the journal points out to even more departures from Goldman as David Solomon, they report, tries to thin the ranks to a certain extent of what it means to be a partner there, those partnership ranks. And really, it's more of a title than anything else. Obviously, this is a public company. It's no longer the private company it once was, where a partnership was the big ring that you were always going after. But what do you make of that? And, of course, I think of it in light of what we talk about so often, which is what is significant change going on at this investment bank in terms of its approach.
They have to be something else. And when you look at the price earnings multiple, it is a little better than Ford's old client of Goldman, of course.
That's right. They took Ford public.
Exactly. It is, without a doubt, a great quandary for those of us who work there or know their business to think that they could let this thing slip. I am surprised that they weren't doing this earlier. It's some consolidation of power. The people who are leaving, I think, they're all good. I know a lot of the guys who are leaving. That's not the point. I think the point is...
Listen, when you get old, when you're older, if you're in your mid, I hate to say it, mid-50s at Goldman and you've been around, they're going to push you out to make room. Now, there are also some other younger people who are also...
I'm young.
No, you're not.
No.
Not really.
I was.
Yeah. But I like to think of you as young because that makes me a kid.
Yeah, you're a child.
Yeah.
But what Solomon did, I think, is recognize, you know what, you can't have all these people who are in their 50s. You're absolutely right. And by the way, Lloyd Blankfein was right to step down when he did because you were going to lose guys like Solomon. Now, some of these departures are people who have found that they were on the wrong side. There was two people trying to get the job.
There were, and you're right. And the bankers perhaps in a better position than the traders. But, of course, you and I, as we should, have been focused on their efforts in terms of changing the face of the bank in terms of retail.
Right.
Now, Mr. Solomon will tell you, come on, you know, we're still what we are. We're just also making a pivot to a certain extent because we see a market opportunity.
Yeah.
So far, they've been investing, and the question is when the returns begin.
Well, it's at 8x multiple. They are not what we said they are.
Right.
To use a football analogy. David, here's what is no one's talking about. The Apple Card. I don't know if you've gotten it.
I have not.
What the heck's with you?
I have no interest in getting the Apple Card. Why should I? Tell me.
You don't even have the Apple Watch.
No,
the
I don't.
Apple Watch today told me I was on a Cybex. Actually new. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Really?
Yeah. But I would tell you that the Apple Card,
yes,
the lowest cost of acquisition imaginable, that Goldman may actually have stumbled on something that nobody wanted. Nobody wanted, and that's a great idea in order to be able to build retail. I've never liked retail. I've never liked retail because when I was at Goldman, we were supposed to go after elephants.
Right.
Now
to make sure our viewers understand, particularly those may be listening, not watching, retail as in retail investing.
Right.
Retail.
Smaller.
Yes.
And, you know,
selling stuff out of a mall.
If the investor didn't give us $10 million, that person wasn't big enough. Now, that's a totally changed model. Yep. I mean, Goldman's going after everything. They're going up against Schwab. I remember when they were going to buy Schwab, 1999, 2000. Retrospect would have been good.
I remember when Schwab's market cap exceeded that of Merrill Lynch. By the way, Schwab's market cap is very sizable.
Yes, well, why not? They're taking in the most money of, you know, they take in more money per day than Goldman was taking in. I don't know, but let's put it this way.
Charles Schwab has a $52 billion market cap.
Goldman is the great quandary. It's a 77. It's not that big.
No.
By the way, we're not talking about
Charles Schwab.
About Jolo anymore. The billion-dollar whale.
No, we're not.
That's no longer in the... Man, was that guy. He was leading a life.
Yeah.
No, I never led that life. I was always doing work.
Yeah, you've...
I read through what he did at the expense of Goldman Sachs in his country, and I realized I've missed my calling.
Really?
It must have... Well, he was like, you know, kind of like a fat, dopey-looking guy, and he just had models and... The movies he was making, The Wolf of Wall Street, the guy had everything. I'm looking at Shannon Seamus right now, our producer.
But now he doesn't.
She should be doing, this is the greatest gift
him?
I've ever
where
given.
Is he in China? Where is
I don't know where he is. He's leading the life, believe me.
I want to talk more about WeWork at some point, but Lyft is up. But you know what, let's get to Seema Modi, because I know she's been following some other things that are moving this morning.
Hello, good morning, David. That's right. Markets rallying after U.S. and China announced that they would resume trade talks in early October. That's really raised hopes that both sides are working towards a deal. We are up triple digits on the Dow, S&P 500 up 1%, now trading at a one-month high. And it was a very strong session in Asia as well. We saw China up 1%, the Japanese stock market up about 2%. Here we go. And Europe also higher, despite weak German factory orders that were released this morning. All of this as the U.S. dollar continues to weaken, down yet again today. And that's one of the reasons emerging markets are up, small caps are up. Big tech is rebounding right now. We're looking at industrials and chips. These trade-sensitive sectors are really all higher today and behind today's rebound. So certainly a risk-on tone to today's market. Meantime, a number of consumer names quietly hitting new highs yesterday. We had Hershey's, Procter & Gamble, Pepsi, and P&G. Coke as well. So we'll have to see if these names can continue that move to the upside. Just taking a step back and putting today's move into perspective, the Dow has now gained around 4% since last Monday, trading less than 3% away from its all-time high. The S&P 500 is just a little more than 2% below its all-time high. Now, whether this trade-induced rebound can continue, it really rests on the upcoming meeting in October. And that job support tomorrow, if it's too strong, that could certainly change the Fed's timetable. Guys, back to you.
Okay, Seema, thank you. Let's head to the bond pits now, check in with Rick Santelli at the CME Group in Chicago. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, David. You know, one-week charts, I'm going to use all of them today for everything we're looking at because there has been a change. Now, granted, when you have an August the way we had with regard to humongous drops, not only domestically on the interest rate side, whether it's sovereigns or corporates or spreads remaining tight, it's a global phenomenon. And maybe we're not even leading this one. Look at a 1 week of 10s, okay? Now, 10s indeed are a bit higher, but do keep in mind, we're at 147. The low closing yield, going back 3 years plus, is right around 143. So it isn't a huge bounce, but it's stabilizing. Now, look at it with 1 week, same time frame for a 10-year boon. You can see the difference. Minus 60. How do you make minus 60 look terrific? You start out at minus 73. So indeed, it's a pretty good move. Another reason to think that this is something significant is not only how equities have gained traction, which isn't a bad thing when you pair it with this move, but look at 10s minus 2s. Now, 3 or 4 basis points isn't a lot, and I'm not going to make a big deal out of it, but I think the inversions didn't mean a lot either. But the fact that the long end is doing this and the short end is allowing it to happen in the midst of all this global activity is significant. Now, guns hot, euro versus dollar. The euro's hot. Look at 1 week of the euro. Very nice. And the fact that rates are moving up before a September 12th ECB meeting is significant. And finally, it comes at the behest of, yes, you guessed it, 1 week of the dollar index, which has actually given up a lot of ground, as you see on this chart. David, Jim, back to you.
Thank you, Rick.
Semis are the star of the day. Even Intel's breaking out here. Look at NVIDIA. This is a sign, David, that people believe the cycle has bottomed. and let's not worry too much about China.
Yeah, speaking of China, SAMR, the antitrust authorities in China, are at least starting the review of the Mellanox deal.
Are you serious?
They hadn't actually taken it for review yesterday, they announced that. Doesn't mean
Jensen Huang, when I was with Jensen Huang, of course, we're speaking about the brilliant CEO of NVIDIA, he told me not to worry. He repeatedly has told me not to worry,
I don't know. I mean, they haven't approved it. They just started the review.
I have that insight that nobody else had.
Not to worry.
Jensen Huang, yeah.
But do you think he would have told you to worry?
Yes.
Well, if he was worried, do you think he would have said, I'm really worried?
Do you know that
this may not work. I made a really big mistake.
Do you know he gave my dog NVIDIA an identity card? My dog can get into NVIDIA's beautiful headquarters anytime he wants.
Note to all CEOs out there.
I can't, but NVIDIA's.
Let's talk about the NFL.
Anyway.
Yep. Which you talk about a lot now.
Yeah,
I got a
fantasy thing going today. I'm doing my 1045.
100th season, Jim, tonight. The Chicago Bears will kick it off. They're hosting the Green Bay Packers.
I'm playing Montgomery. Playing Montgomery. Believe me, he is going to tear it up tonight.
Hey, it's an NBC game. 7:30
Isn't that
Eastern.
Fabulous? So I play Valdez, Exxon Valdez. That's my joke name for him, but... I mean, I've got him versus Debo Samuels.
You know, we had Jerry Jones on with us yesterday.
He said
he was here. This Comstock Resources, he's put a lot of money in that company. By the way, natural gas prices. He seems to think things are going to go in the right direction.
Well, they're minus.
They just went
above minus.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did because of the new pipeline that just is opening.
Yeah, but the new pipelines that are opening are going to be less flaring, so you're going to have more gas because the Permian is as much a gas field as it is an oil field.
You know, it's important to methane gas. Gets a bad rap. I mean, because it destroys the environment. I mean, what is the point of that? Methane gas, bad rap. Incandescent bulbs. I mean, these are things, by the way, cafe standards. Do you know, the oil industry is actually like...
You're talking about all the things the Trump administration is trying to roll back.
The oil
industry is actually not that interested.
The oil industry has told me over and over again, if they don't cut back on methane, if a Democrat ever takes the White House, they're crushed. Same thing with the auto companies.
With California standards.
Right.
And the
incandescent rollbacks is responsible for as much as 25% decline in
electricity used.
But these are things that America is against. Not Republicans or Democrats, but the president is not a great steward of the environment.
I think that's a fair
right. I promised my 28-year-old
daughter
in Italy with me that I would say
that. Headline. I never thought I'd see him say you can't have your... light bulbs that save energy. But let's get back to Jerry Jones and football, something we can all agree on.
Right.
It's great.
Well, Jerry Jones had some comments about me that were so nice. I have to reflect. You know, I drafted Zeke, and he told me that I was
what he
so
had to say
smart.
To what he had to say about that new contract with the running back.
I just turned
Ezekiel
my pockets
Elliott.
Out upstairs. It means I'm $100 million lighter as of this morning. But seriously, Zeke has been arguably our best player. We're glad to get him booked in. We're glad to have him on the team.
There it is.
Well, I had Jerry on last year. He knows I'm a fantasy guy. And I said, listen, when I have fantasy and I play a guy and he doesn't do well or I lose, I am crushed. I said, what do you think of that? He goes, you know what? Here's reality. When we lose, I want to climb a tall building and jump off. So, I mean, he takes it very personally.
Takes it hard.
He could not believe that I drafted Zeke, given the fact how much I like the Eagles. But what matters is that Jerry is one of the great owners because of his passion.
All right. We've done our part for corporate synergy. 7:30 Eastern. Green Bay and Chicago. By the way, we're also staying on top of the rally going on right here at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the S&P up 1.2%. We're back right after this. You look at FANG this morning. You can see Netflix is negative. There was this report they're denying about perhaps a change in the way people are allowed to view series, you know, going to this weekly format. Apparently they are saying that is not the case, but you can see the stock is down. Everything else having a very strong morning. We're back after this. All right, welcome back. Time to ask Jim at least what's going on tonight on Mad Money.
Union Pacific got Proku down. Okay, here's what we got. Carvana, perhaps one of the most controversial stories of our time, which is the idea of a car vending machine. It's doing incredibly well. There are shorts out there. They have been steamrolled. God, it's good to be back.
It's good to have you. It's good to have you.
You are good, man. That stuff right at the top is so good.
You like that? All right. It's always nice when he likes what we do here. He'll be back. Can't not see him. He's on all the time.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.